Hello and welcome to the podcast of Vineyard Church here in Maryville, Tennessee. We post our Sunday messages here each week, as well as our conversations episodes, which include interviews, special announcements, and in-depth teaching. You can visit vineyardchurch.us to learn more about us or to access the audio archive. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts. And now, here's the episode.
Super glad you guys are here. My name's Aaron. We're in a series on the book of 1 Thessalonians. We actually started that series last week, so this is part two. If you weren't here last week, maybe grab the podcast, get the foundation. It was an introduction to make sure we're kind of on the same page. We also went through chapter one as well. So encourage you guys to do that. We're going to be in this series for a total of 9 weeks. Our text today is 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. We're moving all the way through verses from 1 to 16. And the main theme in this text is Paul is defending his authority and his right to speak to the Thessalonians. And he's explaining to them, hey, here's why you should trust me. He's going to say some challenging things. He's going to speak directly into their lives. Honestly, by the time we get the last couple chapters, he's going to get seriously into their business. And he's saying, all right, why should you listen to me in the first place? And that's what we see here. And so the big idea for us in terms of the takeaway, of course, is to understand that. And then also what he does is Paul explains why he is worthy of trust. He gives us a pretty good map for how we can know the type of person we should put our trust in. And that's a tricky, I mean, this is a busted world with busted people, imperfect people. And so it's a huge question. Who can we trust? That's what we're going to wrestle with today. Before we get going, though, I want to warn us against any kind of magical thinking as we go here. So let me say this very clearly. Only God, period. Only God is worthy of your absolute trust. And I am convinced that being let down, honestly, even being betrayed, is just an inevitable part of life in our fallen world. And I don't think any single one of us gets to be exempt from that. I just think it's part and parcel to the world we're in. So what I'm not doing here, and hear me on this, I'm not trying to suggest that if we apply the right metrics to our lives, as we learn from the text, that we can avoid that outcome of being betrayed or let down. We can't avoid that outcome, all right? I'm also not implying that if you have been betrayed, that it's somehow your fault for trusting the wrong person. The blame for betrayal lies squarely on the one who does the betraying, period, okay? And just to make that really obvious, guys, Jesus was betrayed. So if we're going to start blaming victims, we're going to end up pointing our fingers at the King of Glory, and that's not a good idea, all right? So we're not to blame if we have been betrayed. And one more, one more caveat here. I'm not about to tell you to start chopping people out of your life because they didn't get like a perfect score on the things that we're about to discuss, all right? Nobody gets a perfect score on the things we're about to discuss. There's gotta be nuance, okay? And make sure you get this as I say it. Trust is a dimmer. It's not an on-off switch. It's not all or nothing, okay? It's a dimmer switch. It goes up and down where different people are at different places. There's gotta be some nuance in this. So don't start cutting people out of your life unless you should. Everybody tracking with me so far? Okay, cool. Let's jump into the text, starting with verse 2. You know how badly we had been treated at Philippi just before we came to you and how much we suffered there. Yet our God gave us the courage to declare this good news to you boldly in spite of great opposition. It's like we came to preach the gospel to you and it was all sorts of trouble to do it, but we still did it. Verse 3. So you can see we were not preaching with any deceit or impure motives or trickery. So first thought right out of the gate here is why should this little church in Thessalonica, this little startup church, trust Paul's authority to speak into their lives? And as we said before, this is no small thing. Paul's going to address some really intense stuff. And we should also keep in mind, it's not as if the people in this little church can look to the rest of the New Testament in order to confirm what the Apostle Paul has said. Scholars think that this was actually the very first New Testament letter that was written, the first book in the New Testament that was written chronologically. And so there's no reference material outside of the Old Testament for them to look to. So this is important that they understand that they can trust him. And first he says, guys, you can trust me because I took a huge risk in order to bring you the gospel in the first place. He has already faced severe persecution, and he has done it exclusively in service to these people whom he loves. Now, that's a metric for us too. Are people willing to sacrifice on our behalf? This does not mean, by the way, that someone has to prove that they're a hero before we can trust them. All right, what Paul's done here is heroic, and heroism is rare. And it's good to give the benefit of the doubt to people, especially to other Christians, for sure. But we should look for real evidence of servanthood, of selflessness, of sacrifice on our behalf before giving people like huge authority in our lives. Sometimes people, you know, they seem to make good points, they speak clearly, and you think, yeah, I'm just going to trust what they say. But first, before you start leveraging on that, let them first demonstrate genuine sacrifice. It's worth asking what people's motives are. I love the Young Life Ministry, and I love their motto, which is earn the right to be heard. I think that's a great statement. And we need to ask ourselves, has this person, before we put our trust in them, have they earned the right to be heard? All right, back to the text now, verse 4. For we speak as messengers approved by God to be entrusted with the good news. Our purpose is to please God, not people. He alone examines the motives of our hearts. Never once did we try to win you with flattery, as you well know. And God is our witness. We were not pretending to be your friends just to get your money. As for human praise, we never sought it from you or from anyone else. Okay. So obviously, like, it doesn't say it explicitly, but Paul's reacting, it seems, to someone. Apparently people in the circle of the Thessalonian church, either in, from within or without, are trying to discredit Paul, which is why he's probably going to such great lengths to defend himself here. And unsurprisingly, apparently, these people who are looking to discredit Paul, like trust us instead of him, unsurprisingly, they're after their money, all right? And Paul, I hope we'll notice it. Paul's just drawing a really clear line. Don't trust people who are after your money. And if we look, we can tell, all right? And I just, quickly about this, because I know that you all know this. Or like if I polled the room, all right, show of hands, who thinks we should trust people who are only after our money? Who thinks we shouldn't trust those people? We'd all get it right. Everybody in the room knows we should not trust people who are just after their money. We all know. And yet, it's a huge problem. We all know better, but people keep doing it, don't they? All around us, which means, hey, just knowing better doesn't equal doing better. Maybe I should stop and seriously evaluate this. It's worth looking into. We're told this church's origin story, as we referenced last week in Acts chapter 17, and we get kind of the backstory to how this church got started. And one of the little clues we get in that chapter is that some of the people who were in this little church startup were influential and they were well off. And apparently that got noticed because that always gets noticed. And so we need to ask, are the people who are asking for our trust, are they demonstrating genuine self-sacrifice, or are they just after something for themselves? And maybe it's money or maybe it's something else, all right? But are they genuinely demonstrating that they're out for your good and not just out for their own? And then while we're here, there's also a bit in there that we read about flattery. It's like, we didn't come to try to flatter you. And I think it's worthwhile for us to stop and give this some serious consideration while we're here. Man, I love a compliment. Don't you? Unrelated, I've been meaning to say this all day. You guys look great today. I mean, you just look incredible. Like, hey, you know, it's a bit and it still feels good, right? It's like, yeah, I do look good today, okay? I'm so genuinely so embarrassed to admit this, but when I look back and think, man, why in the world did I ever trust that person? I should have known better. Why did I trust them? More than once, I've looked back and I've had to admit that it's because they flattered me. And that maybe I even looked past some flags, some yellow flags, maybe some red flags, because they apparently could read some insecurity in me and they played on it. I mean, come on, like if they think I'm awesome, how could they not be awesome? Like they're clearly a great judge of character, right? Man, I don't like telling you that, but it's like I usually don't mind confessing stuff to you guys. That one is hard to confess because it makes me feel like a fool, you know? Why is it easier for me to confess my sin to you than to confess that I'm a sucker? I don't know. I think there's some probably pride at play there. And then I have to be mindful once I notice that, I have to be careful not to let the pendulum swing the other way where you side-eye anyone who compliments you. It's like, oh, you liked the sermon, did you? I bet you did, you know? Because here's what happens, man. We get hurt and then we get reactive and then we get stupid. I don't know a better word to say it. Like my intellect, my IQ drops as my emotions go up. My rationality just disappears as I get reactive and emotional. So look, if you're anything like me, this may be hard to see and even harder to admit. It's hard for me to admit. But if you're easily flattered, then you're just especially vulnerable to trusting someone who doesn't deserve your trust. And our pride, our insecurities, they can be blinding to us. So we really need to look to Jesus, of course, the scripture, of course, and to the people we do trust the most who have earned that trust to be discerning, because, man, we've all got blind spots. Paul does kind of give us a little bit of a trick to help us know who's who in this. Like, are these people who are willing to say hard things to us, or are they just tickling our ears? Look, if they're getting to you through flattery, then they're not going to have the guts to tell you something hard. And Paul warns us, hey, you want to keep an eye out for that. So in verse 4, he says, our purpose is to please God, not people. He's like, we're not just trying to make you like us. He's very clear. He's like, we're all in for you because we're all in for Jesus, and he really loves you. So we're all in for you, but this is for him. We're trying to please the Lord, not you. And then later in verse 12, he says, we pleaded with you, encouraged you, urged you to live your lives in a way that God would consider worthy. In other words, he goes, you remember we pushed on you. There was genuine challenge. We didn't just tell you what you wanted to hear. We told you what you needed to hear. So look at me, folks. Like, it is a very natural tendency, but it is a devastating one. We tend to pull in closer the people who flatter us, and we tend to push away the people who challenge us. And again, it's a tough thing to see in ourselves. And like, I say this with lots of love and understanding as someone who has made the same mistake. But I'm telling you, folks, if you pull in the people who flatter you and push away the people who challenge you, it's like 10 kinds of foolish. Like it's just total folly. Do not make this mistake. And I know you know better. I know, I do too, but we got to do better. Know better, do better. If you have a friend who loves you enough to tell you the truth, okay? And to be, it must be in love, okay? I'm not going to tell you should trust somebody because they're willing to be mean to you. I don't mean that at all. But if you have someone who's willing to love you well and then also challenge you to be better because they know the type of man or woman you intend to be, you have a gift in that person. It's called a friend. They're a friend. And if you cut that person off because they were loving enough to tell you something hard, you're cutting off your nose despite your face. As that weird expression goes, that's a very strange thing to say. I thought about that this morning. I was like, it's pretty gruesome, but I'm going to stick with it. You are cutting off your nose despite your face. And you don't have to agree with them. Maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. I don't know. But if you curate your world to only get compliments, you are turning your blind spots into a worldview. That's good. Some of you got it. I'm going to say it again so more of you go, If you curate your world to only get compliments, you are turning your blind spots, willfully turning your blind spots into a worldview. And that's a bad idea, and that's a dangerous place to be. Proverbs 27:6, there's so much wisdom packed in this one verse. The wounds of a friend are trustworthy. Like a genuine friend, when they say the hard thing and it hurts, you can actually trust that wound. But the kisses of an enemy are excessive. Oh, enemies, they're going to flatter you. Real friend's going to say the hard thing. And I'm not talking about being mean. They're going to say in love. And again, I know you know all this stuff. This is not new information to anyone. No one disagrees with me right now. You know this stuff. I know this stuff too. You know what else? I also know the quadratic equation. I never use it. I don't even remember what it's for. But I remember it because of the song. Do you guys remember the? I learned it from negative B plus or minus square root, plus or minus square root. I'm trying to impress you. B squared minus 4AC, B squared minus 4AC over 2A, over 2A. No, I'm just kidding. We're all going to sing it together. My daughter learned a different song. I don't like it as much. I like my song. I know the quadratic equation. I have no idea what it's for. I never, ever use it. Do not let this wisdom get filed away with the quadratic equation in your mental junk drawer of stuff that you know but don't use. Somewhere between none of us and a very small percentage of us actually need the quadratic equation in the real world, but 100% of us, there are no exceptions. We need to be wary in the real world of people who are flattering us, of people who are getting close to us because of what they can take from us and not what they can give, and of people who just blow smoke because they don't love us enough to tell us the hard things. 100% applicable to us all, and the stakes are often really, really high. Later on in the series, toward the end, we're going to talk about the end times and rapture theories, and many of you will be intensely interested in that. But honestly, I don't even know how much it even matters. That whole thing, the end of the world stuff, let me bottom line it for you. Jesus is coming back. We need to be ready. There you go. I mean, still come to that sermon, but like that's where, let me bottom line it. He's coming, be ready. But today's completely uncontroversial teaching, where you probably won't learn anything new, is so vitally important to every single one of us right now. All right, so these last few verses, there's a bit of a tonal shift that I want to pull out. And what happens is Paul starts talking about family. And I want to tread lightly here because, as we know, like it just hurts so much more to be betrayed by family. It just hurts so much more to go, they're my family and I can't trust them. It's a whole other thing. And maybe your family is amazing across the board. Maybe they're terrible across the board. Most of us are somewhere in between. But either way, we all have this ideal in our minds. We know, whether we've experienced or not, we know what family should be. All right, there's this, like we know intuitively that trustworthiness should be a given within the context of a family, whether that's been our experience or not. And so that's what Paul's tapping into, that sort of universal knowledge that we know intuitively, that trust should come along with family. And as you're about to see, it's interesting, Paul puts himself in the position of a child or an infant, the position of a mother, and the position of a father, here in just a few verses. And I think he knows that we all have varying experiences with children, with mothers, with fathers. And so I don't sure, but I think he's just kind of covering his bases. So here we go, verse 7. He says this, as apostles of Christ, we certainly had a right to make demands of you, but instead we were like children or infants among you, or we were like a mother feeding and caring for her own children. He was like, we're like an infant, or if this works better for you, we're like a mother. And then down in verse 11, he goes, and you know that we treated each of you as a father treats his own children. He's like, if those don't work, we were like a father. And in verse 7 here, I just want to point out, the NLT for some reason uses the word children in verse 7. It says we were like children among you. I think the NLT translators made some really wise choices in this chapter. We're going to see that in a second. But this one is sort of a mystery to me. The better translation really would be infant, where it says children. I'm pointing this out because it matters, because Paul's point that he's making is about his, they came to them as purely innocent as an infant or a baby would. So picture a little baby, okay, with no guile and no capacity to scheme or manipulate or to do harm, okay? But instead, an infant, they say children, and we all know that infants grow up to be children, and children do all of those things. They scheme against you, they plan to do harm. I read this and I'm like, we're none of these translators' parents at any point. Children can be conniving little monsters. We know that. But infants don't even have that capacity. And that's what Paul's saying. He's like, we're like infants. No ill intent toward you. We didn't even have the capacity to have ill intent toward you. And then he says, we're like a good mother. And he goes on to say, well, we were like a good father who only looked to serve their kids. And look, we all know this. No parent is perfect, not even close. But every decent parent is willing to sacrifice their own good for the good of their kids. And that's the bottom line. That's what he's saying. He said he could be trusted because he sacrificed for them. Because in Paul's mind, it was, hey, your deal ahead of my deal. I'm going to serve you ahead of me. And he goes, because of that, I'm worthy of your trust. All right, now, these last three verses, 14 to 16, they're a little bit controversial because some people wrongly have insisted that these verses are anti-Semitic. Because Paul talks harshly about the sins of the Jews and God's anger about that. The anger is toward the sin, okay? But what's clear is, as we read it, it is very clear that Paul is talking about some Jews and not all Jews. He's talking about their sin, not their ethnicity. But there's still a controversy around this, so I just want to point it out. And the controversy is a shame for a couple reasons. One, because some people have read these verses, then misuse them to justify anti-Semitism, which is gross. But also it's a problem because it obscures the actual point that Paul is making, which is that he understands that the pain of being attacked and being betrayed by your own people, by your own family, when you look around and go, man, it hurts more because it was an inside job. He's going, I get that. That's a thing. And let me read you those verses now, verse 14. And then, dear brothers and sisters, you suffered persecution from your own countrymen. In this way, you imitated the believers in God's churches in Judea who, because of their belief in Jesus Christ, suffered from their own people, the Jews. For some of the Jews killed the prophets, and some even killed the Lord Jesus. Now they've persecuted us too. They fail to please God and work against all humanity as they try to keep us from preaching the good news of salvation to the Gentiles. By doing this, they continue to pile up their sins, but the anger of God has caught up with them at last. Now, again, clearly, this is not saying that all Jews fail to please God and work against humanity. It's saying that those who persecute the church fail to please God because God loves his bride, which is the church. And they are working against all humanity because God's plan to save the world is rooted in the church. He's not condemning all Jews. That's silly. He's condemning all people who fight against the plan of God and who look to harm his church. Now, look, I realize that to you and to your sensibilities, that might seem too obvious to even point out. Amen. So obvious. But the fact is, here we are, man, and anti-Semitism is still very much alive and well. It's a huge problem. I want to actually take a minute here and tell you about a deranged man named Corey Mahler. And on the screen behind me, you'll see some of his many, many, many very awful and inflammatory things that he has posted online. And Corey Mahler is a dude who proclaims unapologetically, like he's not a secret. He's like, oh yeah, I'm a racist. And I'm an anti-Semite, and I'm a fascist, and I'm a Christian nationalist. And he'll tell you straight face without apologizing, Hitler is in heaven specifically because he killed the Jews. And this nutcase, he's a whack job, but he has a massive podcast. He has an online following, all this stuff. And he said some of those awful things. Okay. Now, why would I bother even giving this extremist, hate-mongering wacko any airtime on Sunday morning? Like, why are we talking about this guy? There's plenty of extremists online. Here's why. Because he presents himself as a conservative Christian. He quotes the Bible chapter and verse. And he has set up his ministry in, wait for it, Maryville, Tennessee. Yeah. Now, I think the concept of righteous indignation is overused by a lot of Christians, but that should make you real mad. Like, why in the world would he think he would be here? Like, this would be a good spot for him to land. So, even the day, look, I think nothing but the best of all of you, good grief. But even the day, these things need to be said because there's still nonsense like that. No, Paul wasn't saying Jews are bad. He was a Jew. That's a silly thing to say. He's saying it's bad to attack God and to attack his family. And more specifically, we can take those tweets off the screen. I don't like them being in the room, okay? Back now to our actual topic. What he's saying is he's acknowledging how hard it is when a betrayal comes from the people we love the most. And by the way, when that happens to you, when you're betrayed by the people you love the most, Paul's very careful to say this. You're not a sucker. That doesn't make you a fool. Instead, as we just read, it makes you like all the other people who have been hurt by the people they love. Like Paul, like the Thessalonians, like the prophets, and like Jesus. Okay, so almost done here. Let's look at a verse in this text here. We'll go back to it. That sums up all of this, I think, perfectly. And to me, this is one of the most precious sentences in the entire Bible. 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 8. We loved you so much that we shared with you not only God's good news, but our own lives too. Just as an aside here, if you're thinking about doing ministry, there's lots of reasons, good and bad, that you might want to give your life to doing ministry and service to the Lord. If you're not up for that, don't do it. If you are, let's go. Because that's the heart of what it means to be a servant in the church, and it's the heart of what it means to be a servant anywhere. To love people enough to tell them the truth, God's good news, and then to share your lives with them too. Fact is, there are lots of people who want to be heard, who want to be followed, who want their words to carry weight in your life. Lots of people will tell you the truth now just so they can manipulate you later. But the ones you can trust, the leaders you can trust, the teachers, the friends, the family you can trust, they're the ones who are willing to do more than share their words. They will share their lives. And none of us are perfect at doing this. The most selfless, loving, and giving person in this room, whomever you may be, that person still has moments of selfishness, and they lose perspective at times and don't serve the other ahead of themselves. So no one's perfect at this, but as a baseline, someone who is worthy of trust will look to give and not take. They'll tell you the truth even when it's hard, and they will share their lives sacrificing for you. If you want to find somebody who's trustworthy, look for that. If you want to be someone who is trustworthy, be like that. Okay, we're going to do Selah now, which we do at the end of each sermon. Take a few minutes to pray, reflect, to make this as personal as we can, to try and really focus in and apply this. You may find it helpful to bow your heads at this point, close your eyes. Just want to say a couple more things, though, as we move to wrap up here. I have prayed and frankly worried about this sermon more than I do most. And I know there's been nothing remotely controversial in this message. No tricky theological concepts, no brand new ideas to throw you off. No one in the room is going, I don't know, I think that Corey Mahler guy sounds great. Like, that's not where we're at. But I'm concerned because of all the ways these ideas can be misapplied. So I just, let me reiterate a couple things as we wrap up here. And just, I just want to ask you to make sure you hear them. First, no one is perfectly trustworthy but God. Again, please don't start cutting people out of your life if they aren't batting 1,000 on this stuff. No one bats 1,000 on this stuff. There'll be no one left. So nuance, wisdom here. Also, please hear this as well. No one is perfect at discerning who is trustworthy and who isn't. We've all gotten this wrong. Please don't let the enemy shame you right now or condemn you if you've trusted the wrong people at some point. We've all trusted the wrong people at some point. Please don't blame yourself if you've been betrayed. The blame goes to the victim, or pardon me, the blame never goes to the victim. It goes to the betrayer. I remind you, Jesus was betrayed. Jesus was betrayed. It's part of this world. And I know there can be waves of regret. Why did I trust them? Why did I listen to them? Why did I give them a voice? Why did I give them access? Just don't let the enemy lie to you about that. Guys, the goal of life is not to avoid getting hurt. We're all going to get hurt. The goal of life is to glorify God and to join Him in the renewal of all things. And the only way to avoid being betrayed in this world is to opt out of life and to opt out of mission. So please don't do that. But with all that said, I'm almost done. With all that said, there are people in the room who are just wide open to abuse. The flank is, they're wide open. And I want to plead with you desperately. I want to plead with you to apply this wisdom. And I want you to feel a sense of urgency. Not shame, not regret, not condemnation. That's all from the enemy. But a sense of urgency that says, I need to apply the wisdom of Scripture. Be determined to do so now. Some in this room, and this is going to be harder to see. It's going to be harder to admit to yourself. There are some who are curating their echo chamber because you're pushing away people who love you enough to tell you the truth because you don't want to hear it. And you're pushing away wisdom and you're pushing away truth and strength. And it's a massive self-inflicted wound. Don't harm yourself in that way. And don't harm your friends in the process. Wounds of a friend can be trusted. The kisses of an enemy are excessive. As we're about to move toward ministry time, in fact, I just want to shift gears for... This has been about how to not be vulnerable to these attacks or to place trust where it should go, to not be the type of person who pushes away trustworthy people. But in the end, we've acknowledged that if you've lived at all, we're all kind of licking our wounds. We've been let down along the way. Sometimes it hurts. Sometimes it hurts really badly. And I mean, here we are. I just wonder if, as you begin to prepare for ministry time, I think the Lord might just want to do some healing and encourage some people who are like, yeah, I know better, but here I am and I'm just really hurting. And I think the Lord would want to comfort and heal and minister to you.